Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 23. I'm Rob Wright, editor of searchsecurity.com, and I'm here with my site editor, Peter Loschen. Peter, welcome.
Hi, Rob.
How are you today?
Great. How are you?
I'm okay. I feel like it's been a very interesting week. Lots of news in the world of InfoSec, cybersecurity. I was able to sort of settle on one topic for today that I think it's probably time we do a deeper dive. I think it's become even more relevant in light of recent events, but wanted to go back to the flurry of DDoS attacks. I guess I should say the issues of IoT security and IoT malware, IoT compromises that have led to DDoS attacks, the powerful DDoS attacks that we've seen recently, and take a closer look at what's going on with these IoT devices, because as we learned this week, there's a lot going on, or rather a lot that's not going on in terms of protecting these devices. Some truly baffling information was presented by Akamai Technologies this week, a report that they did looking at an issue that was affecting several IoT devices, which we'll get into in a minute. But I guess we should maybe turn back the clock a little. I mean, this has been talked about numerous times. We've talked about it in the office. We've, you know, at various events we've been to over the years, that the risks of having all of these connected devices out there, that there was unseen dangers, you know, lurking, and we just didn't know what they were. Well, now we're getting a pretty good idea of what those risks are of having everything sort of connected. And to be clear, I guess before we start diving into the context and the history of what's been going on recently, we should clarify for the record that when we talk about IoT devices, a lot of people think, oh, wireless enabled refrigerators or things like that, things of that nature. And those are included, but I think we want to broaden or expand the definition of Internet of Things devices for the purposes of our own content and this conversation to include things like home routers, internet satellite systems, things like that, IP cameras.
DVRs.
And DVRs is a big one.
Yep.
That hadn't even sort of crossed my mind until the original sort of reports about the attacks on Brian Krebs' website, which let's talk about that. I mean, that's kind of where this all started. You know, a series of extremely potent DDoS attacks, which we've talked about here briefly on the podcast before. We've written a couple of stories about them. But they hit Krebs' website, and I'm trying to recall the exact magnitude of those attacks, but
665 gigabit, or maybe it was revised down to 620, if I'm not mistaken.
But in the 600s.
That's a lot. That's
I mean, in your opinion, context matters. I mean, that's enough to do some serious damage to...
Oh. Yeah, that's gonna melt things, I think. well, because even if I'm not, I want to say it was last year. It might have been earlier this year. I recall reporting on a report that on the biggest DDoSs up to that time, up to maybe it was last quarter of 15.
It might have been. This sounds familiar.
And yeah, and you know they reported that these unprecedented sized attacks, which, if I'm not mistaken, were, you know, much smaller than the one that hit Krebs.
Yeah, 300, 400, maybe.
I think I'm going to say maybe there was one that was 500, but
maybe. Yeah, but there might have been.
Yeah, no, I'd actually have to start Googling around.
Well, you don't need to do that. I mean, we don't have to get every little detail, you know.
Exactly, but yeah, things are getting bigger because people are finding these new ways to leverage vectors.
Yeah, and so those attacks, and there were attacks on the French
OVH
hosting, yeah, that OVH. That were similar, that, you know, OVH said, well, I think they were even bigger than what was hitting Krebs, if I remember. I think it was in the 700 range. There were two separate ones, they think, and one was in the 700 range. and another one kind of put it over the, collectively put it over the 1 gig threshold, or not gig, terabyte threshold, for which is crazy when you think about it, to be able to generate that much junk traffic that's not sort of, you know, the for a DDoS attack that is not an amplification or reflection or DNS, you know, none of that trickery, just straight junk traffic, malicious traffic being generated and sent to one target. And all of that sort of came after this report that Bruce Schneier had done on the Lawfare blog about, you know, in his experience recently, he had talked to a number of internet companies that said basically they felt their defenses were being probed, and that unknown threat actors were sort of testing these companies to see, with increasingly powerful attacks, to see if they could, you know, take them down, essentially. And I got to believe that Akamai is probably one of the companies that, just by nature of the size of Akamai, they're one of the bigger CDNs, anti-DDoS mitigation services out there. They might have been one of the companies that Schneier had talked to, but I mean, he didn't disclose that, so I guess it's unfair of me to say that it was definitely one. But
yeah, but if you were Dr. Evil, or, you know, Mr. Evil, let's say, because you don't have a PhD, as far as I know.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for letting everybody know that. Continue.
Well, anyway, if you're one of these Bond villains in your evil lair, thinking about how you're going to take down the internet, what are you going to be probing? I'm not going to probe the fourth largest regional anti-DDoS vendor in the southeast of the United States. I'm gonna look at the top of the list and see who I can probe there, because obviously you want to you want your work to pay off, and if you're looking at, you know, if you can look at one company only to probe for doing this kind of thing, you'd probably, I would think that you'd pick the biggest one, because if you're only going to look at one, you want to look at the biggest one. So whatever you find, you can apply the most. You know, these bad guys, the black hats, they're not stupid. They're clearly pretty smart.
Sure.
And, you know, I think that there's probably a whole mirror, you know, like a not quite a bizarro universe, but underneath everything, where you've got all these vendors who are selling security protection products, you know, in the legitimate world. On the other side, you've got this whole sort of an evil mirror, where you've got guys who are people who are probably selling protection services to other black hats who are running.
Yeah.
And you know, we've seen this over the last year. We've seen reports from the security guy, the researchers, telling us about, you know, malware as a service, ransomware as a service. I saw one just this week about it was another one of these criminal activities as a service.
Oh, great!
And it'll come back to me. We'll probably be talking about it next week.
You might be trying to block it out.
I might be, but it was it. but yeah, there's, you know, for everybody who's trying to do good, there's probably at least one guy who's trying to do bad and the opposite. So we're seeing that. We've got researchers who are out there trying to find vulnerabilities to report them and fix them, and we've got people out there who are looking for vulnerabilities to find them and exploit them. And so it's it seems like I just said this the other day, but it's an arms race. You know,
it really is. I would say to your point on that, it doesn't seem like we're doing very much to help ourselves. So with those, with the DDoS attacks on Krebs and OVH, and the suspected attacks, I mean confirmed attacks, but suspected to be part of the same sort of effort on other companies out there as well, Blizzard Entertainment. There was an effort to determine, like, where's this junk traffic coming from? They found out it was these IoT devices. So Akamai, they had Krebs on their network as sort of a pro bono service to him. They dropped him because it was just the attacks were too much. He moved off, but they were able to successfully repel these attacks for a time. And we'll come back to that thought a little bit later, but they did a postmortem on this, you know, these attacks, which they tied to what they called the Khitan or Khitan malware, but which now everybody calls the Mirai malware. And it infected all these, you know, IoT devices. And the most common, I guess, IoT devices that were compromised by this were internet-connected surveillance cameras and DVRs. And they found that roughly 100,000 total login attempts were made from more than 1,800 IP addresses. And the top source countries were China at 64%, Colombia at 13%, South Korea at 6%, and Vietnam 6%. The most attacked protocols were SSH at 57% and Telnet at 42%. The top usernames for some of these devices were, this is amazing, and hold and keep this in mind as we shift gears to the next part of this story, were quote unquote root, admin, shell, and SH.
The account names.
Root was 75%, which is, I mean, that's crazy. So yeah, all of these devices were compromised and, you know, able to send all this, legit junk traffic. So not, you know, some amplification trickery, like I said. So, you know, Krebs moved over to Project Shield for Google, and it looks like OVH is back online temporarily. It is interesting that these attacks were used against those guys because, yes, like you said, Akamai is a big fish and you'd like to test your malware and your IoT attacks on the biggest of the big. So I get that. But I would have thought that if these guys were really looking to send a message or really test their stuff, they would have done it on something, I guess, a bigger target, and maybe done it on something that would have garnered a lot more attention. Like, can you imagine unleashing something on, like, I don't know, an election day that you know is really gonna, like if you hit news organizations on an election day or something like that? I guess I shouldn't be giving people ideas,
but they'll get their own ideas.
Yeah,
but yeah, sure. Yeah, wasn't there some speculation that this was the kind of thing that was an initiation, right?
It might have been, and that there's been talk about that, and I kind of, I'm skeptical of that because, and here's why: because now, if you went all through all this trouble to come up with this malware, and the guy, the hacker person, could be a woman, who knows, who was reportedly behind this or claimed to be behind it, or I guess they didn't claim to be behind it. They said, I have no knowledge of these attacks. I think that was on that hacker forum. But they released the code for this Mirai IoT malware. So it's out there, so anybody can use it. But at the same time, now we all know it's out there. So Akamai knows it's out there. Enterprises know it's out there. Symantec did some research, I believe, into this. So there's all this stuff out there. So now we know that this is possible. You can adjust your defenses. You can look for this IoT malware. So it feels like you just kind of tipped your hand. Or maybe this was the low-level stuff, and the real big guns, the real complex stuff, is hiding somewhere else, and it is going to be released on a bigger target at a more crucial time to really mess people up. I guess I shouldn't think that negatively.
Let's not have shoulds and oughts and that kind of stuff. You know, let's not, judgment-free zone here.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, I mean, the world is a big, scary place, and we have, now that we have all these computers, and I'm not even going to talk about robots.
No.
Because.
Don't do that to me here.
I'm not going
to
do that
to you. We'll be here all day. You start talking about AI and robots and machines taking over, we ain't leaving this room. I'm going to build a bunker, man. That's a fair warning.
Right. Well, okay, but given all the computers that are all over the place, when I talked to Paul Vixie earlier this year at RSA, he I used a little audio recorder device, you know, this little tiny thing. He said, you know, and we were talking about, it was one of the very, one of those long-lived, I think it was maybe Ghost Script or what was the, Shell Shock?
Maybe. Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he said, you know, you've probably got that vulnerability on that little device.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
But to invoke it, you've got to have somebody send an email or somehow contact it. And since I don't have it connected to a network, as far as I know, the $30 I spent probably does not include Wi-Fi on it. So
you might want to check that.
I will check it now.
Maybe when you connected it to your laptop, it phoned home.
Yeah.
And that's why you've had to get that thing re-imaged so many times.
Yeah, but I was before I got that.
Oh, all right.
But the point is, you know, it's big, it's complicated, there's sure. a lot of pieces involved. We've got a lot of people that want to do a lot of different things, some of them good, some of them bad, some of them neutral.
Yeah.
So, you know, these things are going to keep happening. And I think one of the things that Paul Vixie, when I asked him, how do we fix this, he said, you just throw it out and get a new one that's not vulnerable. But, and on the one hand, it's, you know, it goes against the grain to say, okay, throw these things out because they're vulnerable. On the other hand, if it's going to cause a big, if it's going to cause damage, then I do want to throw it. I do want to renew it. Maybe we do want to look at ways to make some, at least even maybe just have a chip that you pop out every once in a while to, you know, that's not going to work because that doesn't boost sales.
Right.
The security thing, if you can tell your customers that you've got to replace your DVR every 2 years or replace your router or replace your baby monitor or your, you know, your security cameras every 2 years, that's great for business. It's not so great for the environment, maybe, where we have to keep manufacturing all this stuff. Here's my thought that I keep, you know, chasing around. The thing is, I think ultimately, in the long run, we've, you know, just like in the real world, we've come to cope with certain things like drunk drivers, litterers, smokers, you know, people who affect our quality of life in some way and who have been legislated against. You know, you're not supposed to litter, but people still throw their cigarette butts out the car window. There's going to be a lot of different fronts on the whole battle, but ultimately we'll be able to tamp down, I'm going to say, most of this stuff so that most people most of the time will be reasonably safe. And, you know,
yeah,
that's good enough. Good enough
you're providing happy thoughts.
Oh, good. Okay. So we're done now, right?
No, we're not, because it gets worse.
Okay. All right.
Well, let's turn to the, I guess, the latest development in these IoT attacks. So Akamai released another report that followed on the Mirai IoT malware, and this was a different issue, but also related to IoT devices and IoT attacks. They discovered that attackers, an unknown threat actor, they think it was one particular group or threat actor or whatever behind this campaign, had found a way to gain control of a number of different IoT devices using a 12-year-old OpenSSH vulnerability, a default configuration flaw that was first discovered in 2004 and apparently was left unaddressed in all of these different IoT devices that were being leveraged this is an interesting part. Instead of using these devices to do a DDoS attack, what they found was that they were using these devices as proxies to run malicious traffic through. I mean, you can do a number of different things with those types of proxies. And I think at one point in the report, they talked about sort of the specific threats that, you know, the stuff could be used for. I think they said that you could use it to mount attacks against, quote, any kind of internet target and against any kind of internet facing service such as HTTP, SMTP, and network scanning. And that they could also use it against internal networks that host the actual connected devices that were infected. So you can create a lot of havoc with this stuff. But I mean, this was surprising because these attacks, Akamai said, predated the Krebs DDoS attacks. So they found a couple of clients in their network were getting hit with this stuff, and then I think over the summer, and they started to investigate it. And lo and behold, here's this flaw that's been sitting there wide open for anybody to use, you know, that leaves these devices exposed. It's incredible.
I'm looking at the report here, and you know, they talk about unauthorized SSH tunnels were created and used despite the fact that the IoT devices were supposedly hardened.
Exactly.
And not to allow the default web interface user to SSH into the device and execute commands.
I know, your head's exploding.
My head is not literally, but figuratively exploding, because you got to, you know, I know why it's happening, because it's much easier if you have a little chip,
yep,
and a little bit of RAM or ROM or whatever, and you've got just enough RAM,
yeah,
right? You've got enough, just enough to run a very tiny Linux distribution.
Yep.
So ideally what you would do is you would recompile just the pieces that you need, burn them onto the PROM.
Right.
And if you don't need SSH, you don't have it on the PROM.
Yeah.
But it's much easier to just grab a tiny Linux or whatever.
Yep, and just slap it together.
Just turn on the things you want and try to turn off the things that you don't think you're going to need. But it's you know, if you're developing a prototype, that's how you do it. You would develop the prototype just, you know, quick and dirty, and try to, you know, make it good enough. But that, I don't think just a good enough for a prototype is not good enough for a production,
yeah,
run. You really need to go back and say, this device isn't going to accept UDP, let's say,
or right,
it's not going to accept.
Exactly.
It's not going to. It's not even going to have a daemon for SSH.
Yeah.
Right. That would make more sense.
Yeah.
But it's great for while you're developing. You have SSH. You can log in from remote, and you always know the password because it's /root.
Sure.
You know. But yeah.
I mean, it's like you said. In the report, they point out that these devices were set up so that you could specifically they were supposed to deny these types of remote logins, even if you knew the credentials, which the credentials in a lot of cases were, you know, I don't recall the exact words, but it was something like, you know, it wasn't password, it was like admin or something like that.
Ah, yeah,
but
that's exactly right.
And so that was the credential combo, admin, to get into these devices. But they were designed in a way that you weren't supposed to be able to do that remotely. It was supposed,
right,
to deny access. And in fact, like in the report, Akamai points out, like we looked at a couple of devices that we traced that were sending the junk traffic or routing the malicious traffic, and they found this one DVR, and they checked to see if there were any unauthorized logins or users on it, and there weren't. But lo and behold, this configuration flaw that allows TCP forwarding allowed these attackers to basically get in there and take control of the device. And it's a flaw, again, that's been out there for 12 years. I mean, 12 years. And Peter, here's the kicker. You ready for this? I don't know that you are ready for it. I'm going to tell you anyways.
I'm going to hold on to my hat here.
So in the report that Akamai issued this security advisory about this this issue, which they call, I guess I should say for the record, they titled it Showdown Proxy, and it's spelled SSHOWDOWN, you know, kind of a tricky one. And I kind of, in the interview with the Akamai folks, they kind of pointed out that, yeah, we know it's a cute little name, but we felt like we needed something to kind of describe what the issue was, and, you know, and we're not a huge fan of boutique vulnerability names, but I mean, in this case, it's pretty apt. I mean, it is an SSH flaw. So they said that, you know, in their report, that they went back and they looked at all the stuff about the documentation on this flaw. Again, it's been out since 2004. And they found that one specific vendor a few years ago had actually discussed this very issue, had said in no uncertain terms that, oh yeah, unauthorized TCP forwarding and tunneling into our devices through SSH is a big issue, and we need to do something, and here's an advisory, and they put it out in 2013, Peter. And that company was Ruckus Wireless. Now I'm going to ask you a question, Peter, and you already know the answer to this. Who was one of the vendors that was affected by the Showdown proxy attacks?
Okay. I'm going to guess Ruckus?
Yes. Ruckus hotspots were one of the affected products. I mean, and just to be completely fair about this, you know, credit to Ruckus for discovering this and talking about it and issuing the security advisory way back when. But, you know, and there's other companies that were involved here. I think the other four that Akamai confirmed were Intellian Satellite Antennas, Green Packet WiMAX Routers, Synology Network Attached Storage, and NUO DVRs or NVRs, Network Video Recorders. So, but this is troubling because Peter, they knew Ruckus, I mean, they couldn't have described this issue better and foretold this if they had gone back in time from this week and written this.
Well, okay. I mean, we should give them credit for finding it, for reporting.
And it is a good security advisory. Like it's I mean, it's short, but it's pretty detailed about like what the issue is and what the solution is.
Yeah. So that's a big part of it, because a lot of companies are throwing stuff out. I mean, you push something out to get on the market, you sell it for a year or two, sales drop off, you introduce your next product, and it may or may not be significantly different. You may leverage some of the technology you developed for the first product, but ultimately, you've got all these products out there. Now, let's say, let's switch gears for a second. Let's say you're a food manufacturer. You sell chickens. So, okay, we all have heard about the chicken recalls, which happen pretty, you know, I'm not going to say frequently, but they happen often enough that there's a standard form. The news report goes, example.com chicken company issued a recall for chicken parts and pieces sold between such and such a date and such and such a date at these outlets. If you have any of these chickens, bring them back to the store or whatever you're supposed to do with them. I forget that exact part, because usually I don't buy those chickens from those manufacturers.
That's probably a good idea.
But there's an infrastructure in place. There's a mechanism for testing things, and it's not tested by the chicken manufacturer. Well, I guess but there's a government infrastructure that keeps track of food that's being sold, so that you know, we don't want to we want pure food, not adulterated food. So we have that structure in place, and when you find something wrong with your product, there's a way to remediate it by telling people to not use it and to turn it back and get your refund or whatever's involved.
Yeah.
But you look at the DVR market, you look at the you know, all of these, I'm going to finger quote, but the things that are on the Internet of Things, there's no Department of Things in our government.
Most people probably don't even know that they've been infected or that their stuff has been compromised. How would you even know? It's not like you can take the router and log, like, you know, call up a little, you know, a user interface and say, and see like who's logged in. I mean, the average user probably doesn't even know that their DVR is connected to the internet. Let's be honest.
Exactly. I mean, if you're a techie, you can sit down and wire up a terminal, a console, and you can probably get a shell on a lot of these devices, and from the shell, if you're running, you know, some form of Linux or whatever it is that they're running, you know, whatever OS it is, if it's if you can get a shell, you can figure out who's logged on. You can look at the process and all that. But you know what?
That's hard.
I can describe it, but I don't think I could do it for most of the things that I own.
I mean, you could do it, and if my grandmother had wheels, she'd be a wagon, you know, as Scotty would say on Star Trek.
That's a good one.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I didn't write it. Yeah, it's from Star Trek.
But you repeated it.
Yes, thank you.
In the appropriate spot. But, yeah, so do we need, you know, maybe we do need some government oversight to regulate how these things with a capital T and an internet interface are being sold and manufactured and maintained.
Well, at the very least, like an industry body to sit down now that we know what the real threat is, because enterprises are in a bad situation here because they're both going to be the recipient of some of these attacks or the victims of some of these attacks, but they who knows, like they could be compromised. You could have wireless hotspots within an organization like our own being taken advantage of, and I don't know, would you know?
Well, that's the thing.
I like the report says that you know they were using this to route malicious traffic, and in the interview I did with the Ryan Barnett, one of the researchers at Akamai, he said, you know, they're very tricky. Like they know that they can just take a little bit of traffic, malicious traffic, and feed it in there and hope that you won't notice and hope that you won't be able to block all the IP address. So how are you even going to know? How would we know? Like do most corporate security teams, that are they going to be reviewing that sort of stuff? I don't know. I mean, they should now.
Yeah.
But at the very least, I think you're right. Like some type of industry body needs to step forward before the government says, like, oh, you know, we're outlawing SSH, because you don't want to do that. I mean, one of the mitigation methods that Akamai outlined was, I mean, they were pretty specific. They were like, look, if you don't need SSH, don't have it on your stupid Internet of Thing device. Always change or avoid shipping internet connected devices with factory default credentials or demand that or require that the users change them upon installation, things like that. Users should set firewall rules to prevent SSH access to IoT devices. So there are ways to like prevent this from happening, but in terms of like you said, like just tearing it up and replacing it, like to do that for a lot of these devices throughout your company, that's expensive. And that assumes that people are even looking for it, which we don't know.
Yeah. So. Well, in answer to that point, I got to say a lot of the things that are insecure are also pretty cheap.
Yeah, you know, they're disposable. They are.
Which, exactly. I mean, I picked up a DVD player a few years ago because DVD player, why not?
Right.
And it's got an interface. Internet connected. And when I hadn't thought about that whole device for maybe a couple of years, and then we're talking about this in the office, and I went home the other day to look to see if, you know, could this thing still be plugged in? Because if it is, it's not good. And then I get down to the basement next to the TV, and it's not plugged in, but there's gaming consoles plugged in. Those are all live on the internet.
Yeah.
Who knows what else is? And I'm not a big electronics consumer, so we don't have a ton of that stuff in our house, but we have some, which I wasn't even thinking about.
Yeah. But now you know.
Now I do know.
Stay woke, Peter.
Yeah.
Stay woke. Internet of Things, the threat is real.
Yes, it is. It is.
I mean, the threat is real. Like the IoT threat. I mean, we joked about it for a long time, but it's real, and I'm sure we're going to be following this for a while. Like, I don't think this is the last of the IoT threat reports that we're going to see, even for the rest of the year. You know, we've got a few more months here before 2016 comes to a close, but it feels like, you know, given what Akamai has already reported, given what Bruce Schneier talked about, I think we're going to see a lot more, unfortunately. And I'm trying not to be a pessimist, but we're probably going to be back in here talking about more of these things.
Oh, I hope so. I mean,
well, I don't hope, but I mean, well, yeah, no,
that's what they pay us for.
That's true. And you are having a good time. So,
Come on, you're having a good time.
I'm having a great time in here. Yes, I'm building a bunker as we speak in Chernobyl, turning our little podcast studio into a cozy little bunker to prepare for the IoT apocalypse. But yeah, jokes aside, Peter, thank you as usual for chatting with me today.
Thanks, Rob.
And thank you to all the folks out there listening to us panic about IoT threats. And on a serious note, thank you for listening to this episode of the Risk and Repeat podcast on Search Security. And we will see you next time.